Hey, hi. Welcome to Someone Else's Movie, the original podcast where an actor, writer, director, or nebulous industry figure gives a little love to a movie they didn't make. I'm Norm Wilner, senior film writer for Now Magazine, and this is The Other Thing I Do. My guests this week are Michelangelo Covino and Kyle Marvin, who wrote, produced, and starred in the 2019 festival favorite The Climb, which Michael also directed. They played two guys called Mike and Kyle, who cycle into and out of each other's lives over the course of several years. It's a terrific little film about masculinity, responsibility, and maturity, if not necessarily in that order. And while its theatrical release was kneecapped by the pandemic, it's available on digital and on demand as of today, and you should see it. Mike and Kyle chose reality, which was a bit of a surprise, honestly. At first glance, Matteo Garrone's 2012 drama, starring Ennio Arena as an extroverted Naples fishmonger who becomes obsessed with appearing on the Italian version of Big Brother, doesn't seem to have much resonance with their work. But the longer we talked about it, and the more I thought about it, there was definitely something there. You'll see. This is Someone Else's Movie.
We're writing an Italian film right now, so I think we watched it recently. But also, you know, it's one of those films that, like, when I first saw it, I just remembered being like, oh, okay, so, like, this is what contemporary cinema is capable of. And there's just this whole other level of, there's these directors around the world that are just making these films that are so interesting and on so many levels I just remember being moved so deeply by it when I first saw it and being like wowed by it that it always sticks with me as, like, I tend to put films in categories based on my first viewing experience and how it affected me there. And then if I go back and watch it and analyze it, that's a whole different thing. But I always think of, like, how much did I love a film based on, I sat down blind and I watched it and how did I feel?
It's funny, I watched it from him. So I loved Gomorrah. I thought Gomorrah it blew me away when I saw it. And then Mike and I it was pre The Climb. Yeah. We were sitting together and he was like, have you seen Reality? And I was like, no. And we just stopped what we were doing and turned it on and sat through the whole thing. And I remember just getting done and being like, yeah, yes. You know what I mean? That was perfect in so many ways.
Yeah.
From the get-go, you know, as soon as that movie starts, it's just throwing you into this whole universe that is absurd, past absurdity, and yet somehow is actually real, and you feel 100% authentic. I mean, it is authentic, but you just feel the honesty of the whole thing. And I think for me, that's what I always look for in a movie is like a peek into someone else's universe that I haven't, you know, had the ability to be inside of, and then to just become surprised at every moment, you know what I mean? And thrust into things that are just wonderful and painful.
Yeah, it was such a striking divergence from Gomorrah, which was, what, like 4 years earlier. I actually saw Gomorrah, it was my one trip to Cannes, and I saw the film there in the Palais and this giant screen, and it's just overwhelming. And then he delivered this, and I kept waiting for a grittier, uglier turn. But then I realized it, like, psychologically, the film is grittier and uglier. It's just so pretty.
Character portrait. And I think, like, not even a portrait. It's like, it so fits into the sort of early, like, Fellini films.
Yeah.
You know, like, it feels like a contemporary, you know, like La Strada or Knights of Cabiria or something like that, where you're like, you're watching this person and it's just, they have a very pure purpose and idea and way, and they're kind of naive to the rest of the world, and they're not going to be told, you know, like, everything around them is telling them no, and this isn't going to happen, but they're like, they're dead set, and there's like this hopefulness, and it's almost a embarrassing hopefulness, because, like, the world is a very what's the word I'm looking for? Like, the world is almost like cynical around them,
yeah.
And is like dangerous and cynical, and yet there's this sort of like childlike hopefulness just in their pursuit of maybe even a dream that to us as an outside viewer is like, who would ever even want to go on Big Brother? Like, what is this? but you look at it within the confines of the story and you go, oh my God, yeah, that's the answer to him. That's his answer to be out of this world. And yeah, I find it beautiful.
Yeah, his ultimate purpose is seemingly already realized, right? Like he is the guy who kind of pulls focus at every gathering and draws the attention of the family, but everybody likes him. And the thing that fascinates me about reality as a prospect, as a dramatic argument, is this person, he's not aware that, like, if he gets this thing, people won't love him. People will hate him. Like Luciano, as a person that they know, is a human-sized person. If you put him on television, especially him, like, he would suck up the oxygen. No wonder they don't take him.
Right.
But his inability to understand that, I mean, it's like, it's the Wizard of Oz, right? You're already happy where you are. He just doesn't have the adventure first. He just refuses to learn the lesson.
I mean, there's something really striking about the echoing that. And it's almost like the most American movie ever.
Yeah.
In the sense that, like, I guess the Western movie ever, where it's like, there's a material goal that you've sort of defined as will bring you happiness, and you're working so blindly hard toward it when your happiness is all around you. You know what I mean? Like, there's such a great echo of sort of like our contemporary culture in his pursuit, it subtly gets to you. You know, you find yourself rooting for this character, for this goal, and you're like, wait, why does this resonate so much with me? And then you're like, oh, I get it. Cause I'm sort of doing the same thing in my own way, whatever that goal is.
Yeah. And, you know, there's the king of comedy too, as the antecedent, as the person who is uniquely unqualified for a thing that he wants more than anything in the world. This isn't that, though. And I admire that. I appreciate the fact that Luciano could actually do it. Like, if he was a little more aware of himself, like, Rupert Pupkin has no talent and would not be successful.
Exactly.
Luciano could maybe do it if he applied himself, but he applies himself to the other thing, which is to just be attractive
to an
empty, like, it's so, when I first saw it, I have to admit, I kind of dismissed it as just like a Fellini riff, which, I mean, there is that. There's the sort of garish Italian culture portrait that Garrone is creating.
Yeah.
But yeah, when you picked it, I took another look at it, and it's like, yeah, it is saying something, isn't it? Like, it's really picking at the allure of artifice.
Yeah.
Someone who is larger than life would want to be even larger in order to succeed.
The camera work reflects to that, and the colors reflect that. I mean, he committed so hard, such a bold choice in so many ways towards that end.
Yeah, and I also think like candidly, you know, for us, it's like, a movie affects you based on what you've seen, in some ways, what you've seen before. And so, like, if you haven't watched all the films that reality is referencing, or that it's sort of that Matteo Garrone has been like heavily influenced by it his entire life and then making it. And I just watched that in sort of a vacuum. I'm just like, you know, overwhelmed by so many just elements that maybe I'm yet to experience. And then we've since then gone back and like, you know, really started studying Italian cinema, and I find so many common things. And it's actually a really fun way to discover, is almost like by like watching more contemporary films and then going back and seeing what they
do.
And I, you know, I luckily had not really immersed myself in Italian cinema before seeing this film back in like 2012. So this was very much, you know, it was even at the forefront of our minds when we were making The Climb, just in terms of like the visual aesthetic and the showiness and these sort of long tracking shots.
Hmm. Well, that's true. I hadn't really thought about the connection, but yeah, I'm still kind of turning over your
scenes and the weddings, and just like, you know, there's like a celebratory big kind of like,
dynamic.
Yeah. Dynamic. Like, it's just very, what's the word I'm looking for? Like everything's like, it's explosively colorful, and it's just
characters,
it's just so rich. Yeah. And you're in a conversation for a moment, and then you're ripped over to this other place. And it's, I don't know, I just love it. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm thinking, like, in terms of the long takes and The Climb, they always made me feel like a co-conspirator somehow, a participant of constantly nervously looking over to see what else I'm missing.
Yeah, I mean, there's something relentless that we knew was going to be there from the outset, but what you really feel as an audience member, where you're like, you're in a scene and you're like, I'm not breathing. You know, I'm just sitting there watching this and there's no break. There's no like relief. And I think reality does that a lot too. It like puts your feet, even though it uses, you know, it'll cut more than us. The relentlessness is there, you know, the idea of never letting an audience take a breath.
Yeah, and the cringeworthy anticipation of something that's inevitably going to happen.
Yes, right? Totally. Yeah.
You know, like he sneaks into the bathroom, or I forget where he sneaks into to like talk to the guy Enzo, and it's just
the dressing room grate. Yeah,
dressing room grate, and it's just like, oh god, like, and you're just like, you know, you're on the edge of your seat. It like twists your stomach a little bit because you're just like, no, don't do this. I know how this is going to end.
Right.
And I think that's one of my favorite emotional states that I can be put in a film is just like discomfort in a way. I don't know why I enjoy it so much, but I just like, some people like horror films. I just like being uncomfortable with like situations that I know are going to end poorly.
Yeah. Sympathetic apprehension.
Yeah.
That's well defined.
I get that a lot. Yeah. Well, no, because and so much of the second half of reality is just my wife calls it bad decision theater, where the drama is about watching someone self-sabotage in exactly the wrong way.
Yeah, completely.
And The Climb has a little of that too, I think, although.
Yeah.
Maybe not. I think the Climb is more tender in its approach to its characters. And reality is really just more about Danny Boyle used to tell you that he treats all of his protagonists like specimens and just pins them down and watches them. Yeah. And I think Garonia does that too. Maybe not so much in something like Tale of Tales, where it's all fantastical and stylized, but his earlier funny films are just about torturing people for our edification.
Yeah, I think because we were making a love story, I think we kind of implicitly knew that wasn't the place for this film to make people super uncomfortable and alienate them. And I think there was a real concern for not concern, but like a desire to try as much as we could to understand or empathize where characters were coming from with what they were doing, and like give them some even like foundational justification or some understanding of like what's beneath it or what's driving this thing that they're doing or where they're coming from. And because we wanted to be rooting for, you know, we wanted to be rooting for both, you know, these guys to come back together, but also, you know, in a way you kind of like want, you're like the hope is like to root for them to be together and also for them
for Gail, for the Marissa character to be with them and then not to be with them. Like, I think part of the fun of that and part of the reason why we chose the big leaps in time and the climb was to allow some amount of time to pass for you to understand that circumstances, you'll find out that circumstances have changed, and that allows you to sort of reset a little bit and form a new opinion of like, well, maybe this was the right decision because this is the new circumstances and it's working. And then you're like, maybe it's not working, let's break it apart. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And that sort of continues to happen in the climb.
Yeah. I mean, your greatest hope for this film, for these characters, is that through the course of the film, they're going to grow.
Right.
Whether together or apart, but it's all about the sort of hard won maturity that doesn't necessarily take, right? Like everybody has that friend where they hope the best for them, but they kind of, how is it? It's the favorite uncle who shows up, doesn't touch alcohol and still crashes his car on the way home. That guy.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that's what we were very interested in exploring, but like, love. And again, I think this is sort of a film, you know, reality is kind of similar in the journey of a protagonist, and that is that, like, you know, how much does he change by the end? Like,
yeah,
it's almost like he understands more, but it doesn't fundamentally change who he is. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's a beauty to putting front and center characters who are who they are. And like, the journey's going to happen. Things are going to happen. It's, you know, their virtues and vices will be tested, and, you know, their shortcomings might be their downfall, but they're going to probably be the exact same person or like ever so slightly changed, you know, version of that person by the end of it. And that's like, That's just, I don't know why we're drawn to that, but there's just something really fun and interesting about that rather than like these like wholehearted, I'm this new person now type movie, which, you know, maybe we'll make someday, but you know, right now it's like, it just feels more authentic. Cause when you're living in life and you're with people who won't change, you're like, fuck, people just like will never change. And so like that, it just feels real to life when you see that, you know, when you see these like broken people who keep making the same mistakes over and over again.
Yeah. And you want to root for them to learn, even if they can't stop, maybe they'll understand. Right.
That's exactly right. Yeah. That's well said.
Thanks. It's reality doesn't give you that. Not really. It's just, yeah, like this progressive delusion that he just keeps doubling down on and tripling down on. And
yeah. But it's the same with Dog Man is like, I'm like, oh my, you know, it's the same sort of cringeworthy, like just, you know, just change your point of view. Just don't think that you're stuck in this thing or in this world or in this. And yet it's like, no, he's going to be at the whim of this other person who he looks up to.
And yet there's a pride to his characters no matter what. Like I think both in Reality and in Dog Man and in Gamora, there's like a personal pride to his characters, which is never diluted, which I think is beautiful, you know, that even though they kick down, they sort of believe in themselves to some degree. And I think that's a really interesting, you know, it's a really interesting thing that you kind of root for no matter what, no matter how many bad decisions they make, you're kind of like, okay, you know what I mean? I'm still with you.
Yeah. I mean, Gamora, you could take you could make the argument that Gamora is all about people who so wrapped up in this identity as criminals that there is no other way and the right. world around them reflects that. So why would they change?
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
It's just that they keep getting killed. And again, yeah, and not learning, but I guess that's sort of the point. By the time you're murdering each other, you're invested.
That's right. You're it's too late.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Knights of Cabiria comparison has really stuck with me. I've been like, since the Fellini box came out from Criterion, it's over there.
Yeah.
I've been kind of pushing back through all of those and watching his evolution. And like of all people, Peter Sarsgaard picked Cabiria last year for this podcast. And
oh, interesting.
We had a great little like 25-minute conversation all about performance, but his case for it is basically the same, which is that it is somebody who believes so much in the goodness of, or not the, in this case, it's not really believing in the goodness of people. He Luciano believes in himself and Cabiria believes in others or in making other people as happy as she is.
Yeah. Cabiria just can't help but be hopeful. Right.
Yeah. So yeah.
He actually doesn't believe in the goodness of others because
I mean,
she gets thrown in a river and she's like, no, everyone sucks. Yeah. Everyone sucks. But like, there's this thing deep down underneath her hardened exterior, which has been tried by, you know, life has created this hardened shell on her. But deep, deep, deep down underneath that, she's like optimistic and romantic and hopeful. And it takes a lot to drill down and get into that. And this guy does it. And then she finally lets go and then she's destroyed. And then he does, you know, in one of like the best endings ever, you know, it's like he completely rips it out from her and you're like, okay, for sure she's just gonna kill herself. And then sure enough, she's like gets up and she smiles and you're like, and you're just like, all right, yeah, because that's who she is. And it's like a very clean, here's the ending and here's who this character is, and this is how she's gonna live the rest of her life. You know, it's gonna happen kind of thing.
Yeah, I got it backwards. It's not that she believes in the goodness of people, it's that she believes in the goodness of the next person.
Right. Oh, right. Yeah.
Well, exactly. Yeah.
And she's wrong there too.
Yeah. Probably, yeah.
Yeah.
Luciano, though, he's built a different kind of shell, right? Like his carapace is the performance, is the version of himself who shows up in drag at someone else's wedding, the version of himself who wants to be on television. I don't know that we ever find out what's inside him, which I think is sort of the point.
Yeah, I mean, totally.
But I think there's a moment where you don't see it, but you feel it when he's walking around the empty, or when he's walking around, when he finally gets into the set. And he's walking around and like looking at it, and you're watching him like touch the dream in a way.
Yeah.
And he's kind of jaded by that point. There's something about that always stuck with me. His performance is he's sort of like seeing the world.
Well, yeah, because here's that why I think that film resonates with me is it's like talent is everywhere. Like you can be born in some small village or in New York City or wherever, and you could have talent, you could have creativity, you could have all these things. But you know what you're presented with in front of you as like the possibilities for life or this, that, you know, and if you become a fishmonger because you live in a village and that you become a fishmonger, but you have this idea and you do the best you can to sort of entertain people around that. And, you know, I think I love that, like, he's a person with dreams and high hopes and has no, he doesn't have the wherewithal or even the like desire to figure out how to actually go get that. Right. Like there's like, for someone who has that performance, it's like, if he was smart, he'd be like, okay, cool. Let me go figure out where I can go. I'll train, I'll do drama. I'll like do, you know, I'll do all these things and I'll take these steps and I'll get to be a performer, but maybe it won't be on Big Brother. There's a simple nature to it that I think I really respond to, you know, and it certainly exists in America, which is just like, I see it. That's the thing. I want that thing. But I don't like, it's just, it's sad basically.
Yeah.
Yeah. I deserve that thing.
I think we're also not talking about the most incredible thing, which is about the actor. I mean, that's the like the meta version of this exact conversation is that he took a prisoner, right? Like that man was in jail.
Yeah, he took a guy out of prison in order to play in the role.
Right. That's the most incredible thing too, is that there's like this meta nature of this character, aspiring for a dream, and here you take a guy who's, you know, a prisoner
who is serving a life sentence,
and you make him your lead actor. I mean. It's incredible. It's incredible on just the film side, not saying, you know, not just on the performance you're watching, but just in the idea of the whole experiment.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not sure I knew anything about that when I saw the film. I had no idea who this guy was.
Yeah.
Yeah. I only found out about it later, but I remember being like, wait, because he plays a small part in Dog Man too.
Yeah. And he's in Martin Eden last year. He's like, he's been around. He's continued to be an actor, which is great.
I think he's still in jail, but I actually don't know.
Amazing. We should have checked on these.
Yeah, I don't know. I just remember when I first read that story, I was like, wait, what? What is this? This is the most fascinating thing.
Yeah.
It's one of those, like, again, like Garon, of course, he had access to the underworld people. He knew everybody from Gamora, right? So he would make these connections. But again, how do you make that jump in your brain from, oh, this guy could carry a movie?
Like, totally. It's crazy. It's a crazy choice.
Yeah.
Mike has a theory that you could.
No, I don't know. It's not. I think that per capita, you could probably find more Italians off the street who would be great actors than any other culture, just because like they're just so emotive as is. Like you might have to pull them back so that they're a little less theatrical, but like for the most part, you know, pretty much any Italian you find could probably, if they can take direction, be a great actor. That's my unproven theory.
I mean, it's hard to argue against it.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm totally kidding. I don't know at all. But again, like even the guy in Dog Man, I think was like, it was his first movie, right?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah, and so I don't know. There's just something I really like. I like that Matteo Garrone has that desire to like go and find someone who sort of purely emanates this thing that he's trying to capture and then let them just be and be there with them, operate the camera, direct them and do all these things. And like, I think it's a big risk. I'm like impressed that he gets, you know, money and resources to like go do it. Cause it's like, you're banking a lot on, you know, someone who hasn't done it, but out of that, I think comes something like really magical that we don't often get in performance, which is just a rawness that I find like fascinating.
Yeah, and it throws you into the movie without the artifice of knowing the person or the face. You know,
yeah.
You just are you're thrust into. I mean, Dog Man's a great. I know we're talking about reality.
That's what we were doing, like, with The Climb. We just wanted a film with no one recognizes the face of the gods.
That's exactly right.
Well, it's funny. I mean, Michael, when you show up in News of the World, it's just like, oh, I just saw him in the present day. That's it was, right. There's this, it's not that you registered as contemporary. It just, it took me a second to sort of map your face into like Deadwood world.
Yes.
It is. Yeah. No, there are people who haven't seen The Climb who are just going to see there for the first time. Right.
Sorry for ruining news of the world.
No. Certainly not. But yeah,
honestly, everyone who sees The Climb outside of my personal family doesn't know my face. So that's great. Like I haven't been in anything. So I think for a lot of people that's potentially a benefit in terms of just being like, oh, okay.
Yeah. I think we're at a time where there's a real appetite and desire in cinema to discover new faces, new voices, new everything. And so like, I get excited when I watch a film and I've never seen someone before and they do something just honest and amazing and real. And I'm like, yeah, I'll watch this all day long. Cause I don't need to like have the comfort of a face that I've seen 100 times do the thing I've seen 100 times. I'm so much more interested in a face I've never seen before that I'm trying to read and trying to understand where they're coming from.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Unless you're using a star's persona against them.
Yeah.
There's more possibility in
right. Or you have a chameleon, or you have those chameleon actors who impress you every time. I mean,
right.
There's a number of those guys who I'll watch, anytime.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Sure. And I think we pretty much did cover the question of if anything you pulled from reality. That's always the way I go out on the podcast. But did I miss anything? Is there something like, is there a direct lift from Garone in there somewhere? Or is there something you're planning to use?
I don't think we ever directly lifted anything.
There's definitely stuff we're planning to use in something else.
I don't know that
there's a direct correlation other than maybe there was something from the wedding scene, but I care the opening wedding scene, but no. I mean, we loved that opening dragon shot. I thought that was a very, very fun way to come into a film.
It's awesome.
But nothing like a directly referenced. We directly referenced a couple French films in our movie, but not this. Yeah.
That's right. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Well, this has been great. I'm just trying to figure out if there's anything else I need to ask you. Best of luck with it. I mean, so many people are going to be able to see it now just since theaters haven't been so accessible. And I mean, honestly, I don't think it lost anything being watched here just with me and Kate together, but mostly just because I deeply relate to the concept of like of failed maturity and struggling. I'm older than I look.
Well, we appreciate that. We relate to it too.
Yes.
My thanks to Michelangelo Covino and Kyle Marvin, whose excellent new film, The Climb, is available on digital and on demand today. You can also see Mike being mean to Tom Hanks in News of the World, which is available now as an on-demand rental. And thanks to Tamar Lee Hibbert and Brianna Hurley. They know what they did. Mike's not on Twitter, but you can find Kyle on the platform at Kyle Marvin Kyle, all one word, and their movie at Climb Film. And you can find Reality on Blu-ray and DVD from Oscilloscope Films. It's also available to rent or buy on Apple TV and streaming free on Hoopla, Canopy, and Tubi in the US. And yes, I checked. And Yellow Arena is indeed a former Camorra hitman who was serving a life sentence in the Volterra prison when Garone met him. He's since qualified for something called semi-libertà, and it's allowed him to build a film and television career. Absolutely fascinating. As always, you can find me on Twitter at Norm Wilner and elsewhere on the internet at NowToronto.com, where I'm hosting a bunch of podcasts as well as writing about film and television. The latest episode of Now What features a roundtable on promising young women. You might want to check that out as well. And you can find this podcast on Twitter at Semcast, S-E-M-Cast, and on the web at SomeoneElsesMovie.com. Our theme song is by The Last Year. If you like it or the show in general, please say so. Leave a review on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts or wherever you've been enjoying us. Every little bit helps, it truly does. And check out the other shows on the Frequency Podcast Network while you're there. Stay inside, watch movies, wear a mask if you go out. I'll see you next time.